Macworld podcast number 337 for Wednesday, January 16th, 2013. Hello again, everyone. I'm Philip Michaels. We're back from CES. We do not have the head cold that everyone seems to get at CES, and that's good because we want to talk to you about the world's largest consumer show. Traditionally, not a huge show for Macs. It's mostly Windows tablets and 4K TVs and the like. But there are a few things, most notably on the iOS and iPhone side of things. And I have two people here to talk to me about that. They have also survived CES. It's executive editor Jonathan Seff.
Hello, Phil.
And it's assistant editor Leah Yamshon.
Hi, Phil.
Hi. Did you both enjoy your CES experience this year? Blank, angry stares at the host of the podcast.
Once.
Yes, let's never speak of CES again, except for the next little while as we talk about the things that we saw that will be of interest to our listeners. I know that Leah spent most of the week running around the massive convention center and sorted exhibition halls, looking at iPhone cases.
Oh, yes.
So many iPhone cases.
I
believe one iPhone case for every member of the press attending CES. And there were so many press people. So why don't you tell us about the ones that caught your eye?
Sure. So one of the halls in the North Hall, it was called the iLounge Pavilion. And that whole area, it took up most of the hall, was just devoted to iOS accessories. And I would say 80% of those accessories were iPhone cases, mostly for the iPhone 5, as you would expect. But there was a lot still for the 4 and the 4S. You know, a lot of people still have the 4 and the 4S.
And they're still on sale, more to the point.
Of course. Yeah. And people still do break them, so they do need a case. Phil, as you pointed out, most of the cases this year seem to be focused on keeping it safe from all sorts of harm, whether it's water damage or dropping a bowling ball on it or keeping dust and grime, keeping it safe from the elements. Most of the cases we saw were rugged cases, and there was a lot of really fun displays at CES where people were testing these cases to the limits.
I have the video, of course, of G-Form showing off their material and how it protected M&Ms from harm when you dropped a bowling ball. So imagine what it can do with your delicate glass screen.
And I'm always dropping bowling balls on my iOS devices, so that's just for me.
Exactly.
Of course. My favorite booth that showed off rugged cases was actually the LifeProof booth. They had this huge area with these different scenes set up. So there was like a little fake kitchen scene where they were baking cookies and throwing flour like onto an iPad that was placed inside the LifeProof nude case, which I believe Lex Friedman reviewed for us not too long ago. But they were throwing flour and cookie dough and getting the case all dirty and showing that even when your hands are covered in baking stuff, that you can still use the touch screen within the case and your iPad will be just fine. They had a doctor's office set up where there was a doctor's office. There was like a science lab kind of set up, and there was a fire like station set up.
At the doctor's office, were they shooting x-rays?
I think that was kind of the point to show that it can protect against doctor's equipment and things like that. So it was interesting.
So that your iPhone doesn't become horribly mutated.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking they would throw some like fake blood on there, but I didn't see anything like that.
What kind of doctor's office do you go to?
I mean, only the most exciting ones, of course.
It's very much a trend this year was protecting your mobile devices, be they iPhones or iPads or even Android devices, I guess people want to protect. And one of the big news announcements out of CES was Corning with its new Gorilla Glass 3 technology. I believe Corning actually supplies that to Apple, if I'm not mistaken. I'm looking around the room for validation.
I believe I that the Gorilla Glass is used on iOS devices and keeping them from getting scratched.
It's to make them more scratch resistant because the problem is not necessarily scratches per se. I mean, there's a cosmetic effect certainly, but it's that damage that goes beneath the surface of the glass so that the next time you drop it, that's what causes the shattering and the the tears and the angry recriminations. And Gorilla Glass 3 reduces the chances of that happening. It makes it far more scratch resistant. And there's a lovely demo up on our sites showing the Corning people firing ball bearings into the glass to show how durable it is. So, Leah, any other cases stand out that don't involve flour and viscous bodily fluids being flung at iPhones with abandon?
Yeah, I actually saw a lot of high-end kind of luxury cases on display at CES. And I'm not sure if that was kind of just to show off that they can make these cases or if there actually is a market for this. iWave makes a line of custom cases that are covered in Swarovski crystals, and they had some on display that started at $300 and went up to $2,000. So if you're interested in showing off that you have that much money that you want to be toting around a $2,000 iPhone case, iWave is the case maker for you.
Ready to take your money.
Right, yep. Mm. And they said that they're all made to order, so they didn't actually make too many last year, but they're trying to get some more.
Well, it takes publicity. A long time to bedazzle an entire case.
It does take a long time to bedazzle a case, especially if you're using, you know, really expensive materials, I guess.
on the iPhone front still, I visited a booth from LensPen. They currently make something, I believe it's called the Sidekick, which is used to clean your iPad screen. They introduced it, I want to say, in the 2011 Macworld. Well, it was then Macworld Expo. Now it's Macworld iWorld. And it's basically this carbon cartridge on a handle, and you use it to polish your screen and remove smudges and what have you. And people were always coming up to the folks at LensPen and saying, "Hey, can I use that on my iPhone?" And you really couldn't because it's a little bit oversized for the iPhone. So what they are doing is introducing the Smart Clear, which is the same product, only iPhone sized. It's going to be $10 when it ships. It's also going to be on display at Macworld iWorld by the end of this month. And again, it's these little carbon pads on a handle. You get about 150 cleanings per pad. Unlike your cloths, which can get saturated with the oils and the smuts and all the stuff that goes on your screen, you have these little disposable things. It's a lot like using a disposable razor, and there are replacement packages, and it's all very lovely. And it was a very nice display from the good folks at LensPen. Anything else, Leah, that you caught your eye?
One last case maker that I saw that I thought was interesting. There's this this manufacturer called Boost Case, and they have this whole Boost Case system where you start with a basic iPhone case that has two small holes in the back of it. And what you can do is you can buy attachments for the back. So if you want a case that's a little bit more rugged, you can buy the extra rugged attachment, put that on your case. If you find yourself just needing like a simple wallet case, take off the rugged piece, snap on a wallet. The basic case, it's pretty cheap. It was $15. And then all these different attachments will run you anywhere from $20 to, I think, $90, which was this little purse thing. So I just thought that was an interesting solution for people that like to change up the look of their iPhone without spending a whole bunch of money on different pieces.
John, did you see anything iPhone or iPad related, or did you spend most of your time surveying the CES landscape for interesting audio products?
Well, yes and no.
Oh,
so there we go. Okay, I'm out of here. No. so yes, while Leah was looking at many cases and some nice ones at that, I was doing a lot of meeting with a lot of audio people. And there's a lot of crossover there between the audio and the iOS stuff, because this year there were a lot of Lightning connector speaker docks.
Oh.
And, you know, there's millions and millions of 30-pin connector speaker docks out there. But now what this shows when the Lightning docks really started to seem to really come out. So if you have an iPhone 5, an iPad mini, a new iPod Touch, and I believe the latest generation of full-size iPad is also Lightning. There's now a whole bunch of products for manually docking those and charging and playing the music. And iHome had they have a really nice setup for the press. It's not a booth. It's actually a off-the-show floor, quiet, serene environment. You go in and you walk around, and it's very nice, and you can actually look at the products and talk to the people. And so that right there, you know, is a step above having to, you know, fight the masses on the show floor. But they had a lot of different nice-looking docks, and they had one in particular that was really cool. It had two Lightning docks, one for an iPhone, one for a full-size iPad. You can charge both of them at the same time, play music from either one. And then there's also another USB port in the back that you can use to connect another Lightning device if you want, or an older legacy iOS device, and charge it as well and play the music from there. So you can charge three different devices at once, dock two of them, use it to set as an alarm clock, use it to play music or playlists from your iOS device. And they have ones that have, you know, two docks or one dock, but that one was really kind of cool. Philips also had a bunch of Lightning dock accessories, really nice looking speakers, very pretty, nicely designed. And the other thing was, you know, this year I noticed a lot of Bluetooth speakers. And Bluetooth, of course, works with anything, but it works nicely with iOS devices too, because they have Bluetooth built in. So if you don't want to charge and dock, you can stream your music using Bluetooth. And some companies that had previous products that had docks in them have come out with Bluetooth versions of them. I had some of those, and also the House of Marley. If you're not familiar with them, it's actually the Marley family.
And that would be Bob and not Jacob, by the way.
Yes, the Bob Marley family. And one of his sons was on hand demoing, and they have these really cool, bright, colorful products. They have headphones, speaker docks, and they use really good materials, eco-friendly, recycled materials. And a lot of their products from last year, they've come out with new versions this year that have Bluetooth in them as well. So it just sort of extends those possibilities. So a lot of that kind of stuff that I saw, but a lot of cool audio products and, you know, good sounding stuff too, not just, hey, look, there's a dock, we can plug it in there and it charges your phone, and oh, and it also has some speakers. You know, nice design that goes into them and good sounds.
So. Right. I think Jabra was showing off a new set of Bluetooth wireless headphones, the Revo wireless. There's also a wired version, however, the Revo, and those are due out in spring sometime, early in the second quarter. And the selling point there is that they have Dolby Digital Plus technology, and also there's an app where you'll be able to import your music library for an improved sound experience over the built-in music app on the iPhone. Also available for Android devices, for those of you still listening who have Android devices. Did you happen to see the blue microphone exhibit, John?
I saw the blue microphone at one of the press events,
yes.
Digital Experience.
Yes.
One of those press events.
Do you want to talk about it, or shall I?
I have that would be the Nessie, right?
This is the Nessie. This is the new adaptive USB microphone for those of you with your own podcast.
Yeah, I believe, you know, it's designed for sort of the novice user, someone who's going to be doing podcasts or other voice recordings. And the name Nessie comes from the fact that it has this long snaking neck that makes it look a lot like the Loch Ness Monster, mm-hmm. which is real, I tell you.
Yes.
And it looks really cool. It's got some you know, features that make it a little bit more user friendly for the novice, as I said. So I don't know if you have anything to add on that, but
it's got the built-in pop guard, so that if you say a lot of P words, then you
perish the thought.
Yes, you won't have those annoying pops that so often work their way into recordings. There's shock mounting, and so that if you start banging around on your table, it reduces some of what they call the gonks that can make their way into the audio track. And I think the the standout feature is probably there's some basic processing that goes on, mixing and recording. Probably not stuff that's up to professional quality standards, obviously. But if you're just recording a thing at home, it will make it sound good without forcing you to play around with the knobs and switches to balance out your recording. And it's going to be $99. I don't think it's out yet. I think sometime in the next few months.
I believe they said the first half of the year.
First half of the year. So, yeah. So certainly by June or July, look for the Nessie from Blue Microphones. They make very, very fine products, I find. Let's see. Apps. It's always CES is kind of a hardware show in the past, and I think that's why it's lost some of its relevance, is that where the action is now is on the app front. And I just wanted to see if anyone saw any interesting mobile apps out there, or even desktop apps. But
mostly what I saw on the app front was in the accessory range.
Oh,
so
yes.
Lots of accessories that have apps that go along with them, or toys that are app powered. I didn't see too many standalone apps that really jumped out. But
so tell us about the accessories, the ones that caught your eye.
So many app toys that were really fun. Fisher-Price has this new line of app-based toys. They call it their Aptivity toys. And there was this cool fortress thing that pairs with the iPad. You clip the iPad into the playset. It comes with little figurines that you can move across the iPad case. And there – or not the iPad case. I'm sorry, the actual iPad screen. And there's an app that goes along with each of these toys. And there's different games that go with the app. You can use some of the interactive features of the playset, like a little cannonball to fire cannons at something in the game that makes it a little bit more interactive. Really fun. I would love to be a kid and play with that stuff. I loved playing with that stuff as a 25-year-old kind of adult. So it was awesome.
A few years ago, I tested ones for cars.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
And I was quite... It was a little bit disappointing, but that was the early days in the technology, so I'd be interested to see how it works now. Sphero has some new stuff. If you remember, last year they made kind of a splash. They're the little ball that's controlled by your iOS device, and their big push this year is in augmented reality games, where now the Sphero in one game, it becomes on your iOS screen. It's a it's a beaver named Sharky that walks around your apartment or your house and gets into adventures, and you can play around with Sharky. The one that I really liked was, I believe it's called The Rolling Dead. It's not out yet, but it's a zombie-based game where basically these virtual zombies start attacking the Sphero, and you get to shoot them with fire, and it's a fun little thing. Drew a big crowd on the CES show floor. There were a couple of apps actually that I spotted that I'd like to talk about. Both not yet released. One is closer than the other, so we'll talk about that. MindMeld, which is a video and voice calling app. It's going to be designed for the iPad, and it's coming out within a few weeks. And what would be happening is we would be talking to each other through the app, just like any sort of voice over IP app like a Skype, and the app is listening to our conversation and pulling up things that are relevant. So if we were, say, talking about going to Las Vegas for CES, it would be pulling up things about Las Vegas. One of the big drawbacks for apps like this is they really don't understand context well. So if we talk about Apple, it doesn't know whether we mean the Cupertino-based hardware and software company or whether we just really like fruit. But the developers assure me that they've gotten the context problem down, and we'll be able to see for ourselves in a few weeks. What you do is it pulls up the information, and you're able to share it with the other people in the call. So it's sort of aimed at businesses can use it for meetings, or you can use it for planning trips with your friends and family in far-flung locations. So it was a really interesting-looking app. And the other one, this was really in the early stages, but it's Atlas-powered, and it's a I shouted with glee when I saw this because it is a meeting scheduling software where you it eliminates the back and forths and, hey, you want to meet at this time? No, I'm busy at that time. How about this time? I'm busy at that time. And so on until you just want to fall over dead with a cold compress to your forehead. Instead, with this app, you select a time for the meeting, but you also choose alternative times. And if the person you're inviting to this meeting is also using the app, it opens right there in their calendar and they can see if there's any sort of conflicts. It's really a slick-looking thing, and it's about to enter beta, I believe. So there'll be more information on that to come, I'm sure. John, did you see anything on the app front that you feel like talking about, or any other CES products?
Like Leah, you know, I saw some accessory type of things, and Philips has this new thing, and it's a wireless microphone and Bluetooth speaker meant to be and used with your iPad, and it's for sort of competitive karaoke or karaoke in general, but you can actually battle with your friends. And there's an app
When will the karaoke violence end?
Karaoke on karaoke violence is a terrible thing, but this is a more friendly. There's an app. It's Star Maker karaoke app. And has auto tune also, just in case you don't know how to sing like most of us. But the idea is it's got
speak
this.
Speak for yourself.
Okay, well, like me. Mm-hmm. But so there's a wireless speaker, and you run the app on your iPad, and it will display the lyrics. And as you sing, it shows you how on pitch you are and how much you're matching the actual song. So you get a score based on how good your singing is, and you can compete with friends. You can then share the audio recording of yourself on Facebook and send it to your friends. So that might be something you might want to do that, Phil, with your great voice. And
yes.
I would probably turn off all the sharing features. But, a cool use of an app to go along with hardware and an iOS device.
Mm-hmm. And I think I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Magellan's Smart GPS offering, which is a standalone GPS device. But there's going to be apps released for it as well. And it has a cloud-based aspect to where all the information is syncing back and forth between your standalone GPS device and your mobile phone, so that when you get to park your car, which is often not – at the same site as your route, your standalone GPS device can sync up with your phone and give you the information to show you the rest of the way. And there are some other neat features with Smart GPS that pull in location-based information that improve upon the points of interest that are often not very interesting or informative for GPS users. So keep an eye out for that. It's coming out later this spring, around about April. Leah, this was your first CES, was it not?
It was.
It was also my first CES.
Really?
After 13 years. Well, for a very long time, CES was held the same time as Macworld Expo, and that's the more relevant event to my life. So I went to that one instead, and so this finally was the first one I went to. I would love to hear your brief impressions of this sprawling, massive, very crowded trade show.
Oh my gosh. I think it was what I was expecting it to be. The first day on the show floor, it actually opened on Tuesday, and I made the mistake of going to the South Hall, which is the largest of the three halls, and it's actually broken into like four sections. And I had a meeting in the morning, and I ran to my meeting, and once that was over, I couldn't tell where I was. I was just kind of in the middle of the show floor, a little lost. So after wandering around and checking out some stuff and kind of getting my bearings, I actually had a lot more fun than I thought I would. Mm. There's a lot to see. A lot of it is just really silly, fun gadgets. So I kept forgetting that I was like actually there to work, because I would be playing with some robot-y thing and then realize like, oh yeah, I need to go write about this now. It was overwhelming. I only would want to do it once a year. It was an experience for sure.
John, you're a savvy veteran of CES. I've get stuck in an elevator this year, I hear.
No. My last trip to CES, I spent an hour and a half trapped in an elevator with senior editor Dan Frakes, and a woman from Twitter who works right near our office.
And yet did not have Twitter on her phone to alert
her coworkers. Her battery was dying, because she didn't have an iPhone.
A recurring theme of CES is everybody's batteries die all the time.
So I've been there before, so I knew what to expect and, you know, knew some of the tricks, to make it through. But, you know, one thing this year is I spent very little time on the show floor because so many of the meetings and so much happens outside of the Las Vegas Convention Center. A lot of the audio, especially higher-end audio vendors, were in the Venetian Hotel in one of the towers, and they had, the 34th floor or whatever it was. And as you walk down these narrow, long hallways, there's little signs above each room. Like, there were just dozens and dozens of these audio vendors in these suites up there. So I spent a bunch of time there and a bunch of time at some other off-site, you could call it, demos, because the show is so big that it's not contained in the one giant convention center. And also for things like audio, you can't hear anything on the show floor. So if you actually want to show people what a product sounds like and really give them a little bit of a demo and talk about it, that has to be done in a different location. So, you know, there was press day at the Mandalay Bay and stuff at the Venetian, stuff at this and that, and just every hotel and every space in Vegas. And a lot of people don't actually exhibit on the show floor either. They just go there, get a suite, and they invite people to come look at stuff there. And that's their CES experience. So, you know, I sort of knew that going into it, made sure to cluster everything in the right places, brought my comfy shoes, and, made sure, you're not going to be able to get a cab in the evening, so make sure you feel comfortable walking a mile and a half down the strip back to your hotel. Mm. So, you know.
Microsoft wasn't there this year in any formal way. They didn't do the keynote. Was there a different vibe at CES because of that? I realize that we don't necessarily live and die by Microsoft say so here at the Macworld podcast. But
I mean, I've been to the Microsoft booth at previous shows, mm-hmm. and it was a huge presence. It was, you know, like a corner of the hall, and it was this giant booth, and you know, Microsoft had a big presence. And dropping out of the show and the keynote, I think, you know, Steve Ballmer showed up at...
He dropped in on the Qualcomm keynote, and one of my greatest regrets is not attending that, because apparently...
Best keynote ever.
We missed out.
Apparently a bit of a train wreck from what I hear.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. The Qualcomm booth was massive, though. It was the first thing you saw when you walked in to the South Hall, and you saw the big Sesame Street sign greeting you along with all the other Qualcomm stuff. So I think they did their best to step up in Microsoft's absence.
And the Sony booth, because I went to the Sony press conference where the Showcase 4K OLED TV blue screened during the demo, but that Sony booth, man, that could have applied for admission into the union. It was so large, it was massive space.
Yeah, I feel sorry for the people who have to come to see us from much further away than San Francisco, because just getting there for us, you know, people that have to come from all over the world, I watch their Twitter feeds and the four planes they have to take to get home afterwards and getting stuck in layovers and weather and all that stuff, even people just on the East Coast. So I'm very glad that it's relatively close to us. But I hope next year CES will be in Hawaii, where it belongs.
Yes. Uh-huh. Well, there you have it, listeners who have always thought of going to CES. An entire week's worth of products distilled into a half hour of your time. I hope it was as informative for you as it was fun for us. And it was fun. I'd like to thank Leah Yamshon.
Thank you, Phil.
John Seth.
Thank you.
And you, listener, for tuning in. We'll be back again with the Macworld podcast next time. Until then, take care.